So I guess we'll go ahead and get started. Thank you for coming to session 161, which is Constructing Zion Doctrine in Domestic Space and Land Use in the FLDS Sect. We're really excited to have Talena Sanders here. She is a Master's of Fine Arts and Experimental and Documentary Arts candidate at Duke University. She's from Lexington, Kentucky, and has her Bachelor of Fine Arts studio with a focus in new media from the University of Kentucky. And normally I ask at this time to silence your cell phones, and please still do that, but if you have a smartphone, keep them out. There will be an interactive element to this presentation. So join with me in welcoming Talena.
Should I use one of these?
Sure, yeah. They're recording it, so.
Okay. Is either of them? I don't know.
Hi, thank you guys for coming. So I'm a documentary arts candidate, and I've been traveling to Colorado City and Hilldale over the past 6 months working on a documentary photography project. So I've originally done a lot of work about dress and identity and cultural identity through fashion, and that's how I initially became interested in working on a project about the FLDS. I was interested in the prairie style dress and the Gibson girl style hair, and I wanted to get in touch with women there and interview them and talk to them about what it meant to them and how it informed their sense of self. But in... Oh, this one? Okay. Change.
Test it.
Okay. But in looking up other people's experiences of traveling there, I knew that it would be really hard to get access and kind of gain trust with people initially, so I started thinking about what else could I do with my time traveling out there, and then kind of obsessively reading online all the time about everything I could find on the FLDS. I started to look at the pictures of the houses and the architecture and noticing a lot of these buildings that had what looked like blacked out windows, and just kept trying to figure out what was going on there. So by the time that I finally got there and started reading further into architecture and land use, became really interested in the connection between their religious devotion and how it influences the architecture of their homes. While I was working on trying to connect with people and talk to them about fashion, I've gone there 7 times, and I've been taking these photos throughout the town every time. Just trying to figure out how this is a visualization of the community's faith in their prophet and a manifestation visually of their resistance to the outside world. So there are several reasons that I've found for the aesthetics of architecture in the community. The foundation is the fundamentalist belief in the United Order. The United Order is a form of 19th century Christian collectivism or communalism. And members in the 1830s would deed their property to the church, to the original mainstream LDS church, and then they would be granted a stewardship of their property. And the goal was, with this form of collectivism, they could eradicate poverty with the early saints and increase their self-sufficiency. So the FLDS practices this doctrine of the United Order with an organization called the United Effort Plan, or UEP. And you'll notice signage in some of the photos that are referring to the property being UEP property in care of a member's name. So before 2005, FLDS prophet Warren Jeffs was in control of assets in the UEP, valued at approximately $150 million. And 2005, the Utah Attorney General froze the trust, and from my research, it seems that lawsuits are still pending and the trust remains frozen, keeping the trust in a holding pattern. And the trust includes members' homes, businesses, and land. And when Utah took control of the trust, the members were instructed by Warren Jeffs not to cooperate with the state and not to work with the state-appointed manager of the trust. So currently, members are refusing to pay property taxes to him. And this is likely an outcropping of a shared belief in what they refer to as bleeding the beast, which you may have heard of, this idea that they think that gaming the government for resources is a noble act and retribution for perceived oppression from the government. So Warren Jeffs further influences, oh, I'll stop here. This is just an interesting point of land use where Warren Jeffs instructed them to pull their children out of the local elementary school and homeschool them. And so the elementary school remains abandoned. And since they've fenced it off and now have goats grazing in the elementary school land. So Warren Jeffs further influences the aesthetics of architecture and landscape while incarcerated with constant prophecies of the apocalypse. Members have given up on finishing their homes or making repairs to things that break. And so you see in the summer there's a lot of effort at landscaping and making things pretty in kind of this temporary way, but then fences are falling apart. You see lots of broken windows that never seem to get repaired, and these massive empty additions on homes that are never finished. So one of the things that's interesting to me about working on this project and showing it to people is oftentimes the initial read on the project could be that it's a photo essay on the U.S. housing crisis. And the ultimate irony is that it doesn't have anything to do with wealth. It just has something to do with a visual showing of religious devotion and that they trust their prophet enough not to improve their homes after this point. And also that many of these members make their living in the construction industry. And if you're interested in finding out anything more about this particular issue with the UEP Trust and the Utah Attorney General state-appointed managing of the trust, there's a really interesting This American Life episode called The New Boss, if you wanted to search that. So switching gears, I'll just tell you about some of my personal experiences of going there. I realized over time that one of the reasons why I'm so interested in this community is I grew up LDS in rural Kentucky, one of only two families in my town that was LDS. And so it was kind of a constant thing when people knew I was Mormon to this barrage of jokes about how many moms do you have? And so you kind of grow up really with a deep sense of shame in the polygamous history and wishing you could distance yourself as much as possible from these people who are still practicing and still associated with the mainstream church. And so I was going there initially thinking about how these people show their identity visually, but then it became kind of an interesting look at my own identity and background in relationship to the polygamous history of the church. And so I've been there 7 times. And every time is a really different experience. Usually, everyone is really polite and friendly. I go into the local grocery store, and one of my contacts there is the owner of the grocery store that I work with to try to get access to speaking with women. And so when I'm with him, everyone is really comfortable talking to me and engaging with me. But when I'm out taking photos, I often get followed by trucks and and one time I was followed for 45 minutes down the highway by a series of cars that traded off at different points. So it's a nerve-wracking thing for my mom that I go and do this, but when I'm actually interacting with people, it's always warm, and at this point people are starting to become familiar with my presence there and starting to recognize me when I go there. So it's an interesting kind of tension, and the moments that I'm actually working on documenting are kind of tense, but then the moments that I'm actually engaging with people are really warm and welcoming in an interesting way. But through all of my trying to gain access, I still haven't been able to get anyone to sit down with me for an on-the-record conversation. And I started going there in February, and since February there have been several significant events that seem to be making the prospect of actually getting someone to speak to me on the record and being able to spend time with women and learn about their fashion and dress even more difficult. So since I've been back in the summer, there's been a revelation from Warren Jeffs that only 15 men in the community will father all future children. So that's one kind of level of shutdown. And since that happened, my contact at the grocery store, I haven't been able to be in touch with him. And then about the same time I went back another time, the United States Attorney General sued Hilldale and Colorado City for civil rights infractions for religious persecution, and they're in the lawsuit saying that people can't get access to city services or housing or police protection who aren't FLDS members. So on top of that, in July, the Mojave County Sheriff's Office started putting in outside officers to patrol the town because all of the police are kind of, if they're not FLDS, they're really kind of swayed by the FLDS. And so there just seems to be this compacting levels of getting harder to access. And in reading recent articles, I've noticed that members aren't quoted anymore. There aren't any kind of interviews with members. It's all former members, people who are excommunicated, or local people from outside of the community. So, if anyone brought a smartphone or a tablet with them, this will lead into the next part of this project. So, in thinking about how hard it is to get access and how few people actually make it down there because it is kind of remote and dirt roads and feels like you should have four-wheel drive to be driving around there and all of these things. So, I started thinking about how many people are interested in this community but can't actually experience it in the way that I have. And I designed a project that's in augmented reality technology to kind of reconstruct this town and be able to place it anywhere and have anyone to be able to have a kind of mediated experience of Colorado City and Hilldale anywhere that my project is placed around. So I've placed it here around the Student Union, and if you have a smartphone, you can download an application called Layar, and it's LAYAR. And basically the way augmented reality works, it's a live view of a physical real-world environment with elements augmented by computer-generated input, which is images, graphics, video, or sound. And artificial information about the environment can be overlaid in the real world and viewed through any device with GPS and camera capabilities. So we still have more photos, but I'll just show you an example of what the interface looks like. So that's kind of, it just looks like any kind of GPS map where you're finding some place that you're getting directions to. But basically I take my photos that I've been shooting in Colorado City and Hilldale and place them into a program called Build AR. And when I place it into this map, Build AR connects it to a GPS data point. And so if you have the Layar application, you can open it and view a live view. So I don't know how your downloading has gone and who all has the smartphones with them, but in a minute I can tell you how to find this project. And that's another map for you. So did anyone bring a smartphone or wants to try it? Okay, so... Okay, so when it gets downloaded, what you'll do is open the application, and in the top right, there's a button that says Layars. If you click that, then you'll search for Constructing Zion. So, and just you can shout out at me if you need me to walk through that again. And I'm going to attempt, I've never connected an iPhone to a projector, but I'm going to try it now and see what happens and see if I can share this to you guys.
Are you open to a question?
Yes, if anyone has questions, please shout them up.
Your write-up spoke of their goal to save on property tax, even though homes unfinished.
Yes, so since I wrote the proposal for this session, this is what I've always heard when I've talked to people around the area, and anyone who, like anything you can find on the internet and these things, always says this idea that leaving the properties unfinished has to do with the property taxes, but I found out that's actually just kind of folklore. And right now, with the freeze on the trust, the manager of the trust is trying to collect millions of dollars of back taxes, but the members refuse to pay him taxes. And there was some talk of evicting people a few months back, but I haven't been able to find out what worked out with that.
So the deed records in the local city or county are not in the name of the resident family of a home, they're in the UEP?
In the UEP, yeah. The families, I don't know how far back, the UEP was started in the 1930s, and so at that time most of the land would have been deeded to the UEP.
So in general, is there a lot of unpaid property tax?
Yeah, I don't remember the number, but it's several million dollars of unpaid property tax.
I think a lot of that is on the Hilldale side. I think in Colorado City they paid some of those back taxes now.
Oh, okay. Going to be strange without light, I guess, but let's see. So I'm the first to admit that this technology is really not quite what you want it to be. It's not quite matching the dream of this idea. Like, you're not going to feel like you're walking down the street in Hilldale when you're looking at this, but it's an interesting thing. So basically, if you tap pictures, then you can get information. So, yeah. There are, as you turn, the other thing that happens with this technology is that you can see it jumping on the screen, and that's with the GPS connection, there's satellite interference. And so it's not exactly perfect, but it's kind of a fun interface.
I have a question that's laced with a heavy dose of humor.
Please.
Do you know if the Google Maps car has been allowed in Hilldale,
yes,
and Colorado City?
Yes, it has. You can look at Hilldale and Colorado City on Street View, which I am really fascinated about how that went down, because you have to drive really slow in the Google Maps car, as far as I know, and it's got that 360 view camera on top, so that must have been a real experience for the guy that was assigned to drive out there.
Do you know if that was before Warren Jeffs was incarcerated?
I think Street View is done maybe, I think it's every 3 or 4 years. So at this point it would have been updated since then, probably.
And I think I heard something alluded to, but why don't they finish the houses? I know you say it was obedience, but said not to.
Well, he's never, from what I can tell, he's never outright told them not to finish their houses, but it just kind of has to do with how often he predicts doomsday. Because, you know, their devotion is that if the prophet says it's going to happen, then all of this won't matter anyway. So why would you sink your time and your resources and energy into this?
How does Warren Jeffs communicate
Well, they're allowed a certain, I think he's allowed 2 phone calls a month.
It's a lot more than that. I'm representing 8 children in Hilldale right now in a custody dispute. And as far as thinking the end is near, a couple of weeks ago they disbanded all meetings until the lifting up. So they think it's pretty imminent.
Wow.
And he can get phone cards. It costs $2 a minute for the first certain minutes, and after that it's $1 a minute. And so, you know, he has phone cards and he calls all the time, sends out his revelations, and his lieutenants publish them.
To either of the two of you know who he communicates with? He keeps switching, you know, representatives.
Yeah, he keeps kicking out the people, as he thinks they're getting too much power, he kicks them out. But the guy right now is named John Wayman.
John Wayman?
Wayman, W-A-Y-M-A-N.
Yeah, the most often quoted person as the spokesperson is Willie Jessup, and he was...
Willie is out.
He he was kicked out. Yeah. And so, and he's now quoted speaking in opposition in a lot of articles, which is an interesting switch.
He's in the other group, the opposition
group. Mm-hmm. Okay, I may be two steps behind, but last I recall, Jeff's acknowledged he was a fallen prophet.
He took that back.
Yeah, you can actually watch on YouTube, there's a video of the phone conversation where he says, "I'm not legitimate," but he retracted that statement.
He said it multiple times.
Mm-hmm. He named other people who were legitimate. He named someone who should have been the successor.
Yes, and that person, William Timson Jessup, is the leader of the opposition.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me it says more than that, because during the period where he labeled himself a fallen prophet, that would be a grand time for a secondary person to usurp authority, but no one did.
Well, he didn't do it immediately. He did it eventually, and that's why. What happened though is that the people didn't follow him, so they've got this new group down there that's being led by the man that Jeff's named, and they hold services. But most of the people who were Jeff's followers didn't.
Didn't follow the new
appointee. They continued to follow Jeff.
And several people have been excommunicated since because of perceived threats to his power.
Many. Mm-hmm. And what's going on down there right now is just unconscionable because they're kicking out parents and telling them to leave their children.
Mm-hmm. They're kicking out parents and doing what?
Telling the parents that they have to leave without their children.
Why can't the parents leave and take the children?
Because they're obedient. And they leave their children.
And there's no law
I'm working on it.
That's the conflict.
I hope that they're going to do something about it, but I don't know.
I couldn't hear you. Sometimes you were straying away from the microphone.
Sorry.
I thought I heard you say that in just recent communications that he had indicated that the apocalypse is just a short time away now.
I said that.
Well, you said that.
I said that he disbanded all of their meetings until the lifting up. So that is a pretty good indication that they think it's coming pretty soon.
Okay.
And that plays into why houses are left unfinished and broken windows aren't repaired and these kinds of things, because it's not important to them anymore with that imminent.
How do they make a living?
A lot of people work in construction.
In St. George,
they work outside.
Of course, with
building our churches.
Housing downturn, I imagine they've been affected like everyone else in the county. But prior to that, they really had a good business in St. George.
Well, the other problem down there now is they're kicking out the men that make the money. So.
The end is imminent.
Really hurting for money. They've got all these families on the United Order who are takers, and they're running out of producers.
Earlier you mentioned a connection with you originally went there to study women's fashion and how they, express their religiosity that way, and that turned to homes. Do you find the same kind of correlation with the, I don't want to say neglect, but have you noticed a shift with this same, like, Warren Jeffs being gone and imminence, and did you notice any kind of change?
In the style of dress and how they're, it's still the same prairie style dress, and, there's a restriction on wearing the color red.
Huh.
Also, the hairstyles are the same, and that hasn't seemed to change at all.
You also mentioned that they're still holding services in the big community center there. Is that true?
I don't know for sure, but what is your name?
My name is Nadine.
Nadine has said that they've stopped all services.
About 2 or 3 weeks ago, they stopped all the services. But then this past Sunday, they called a meeting. So, but I don't know if those meetings are going to go on. They called a meeting to announce more people that were kicked out.
You've never attended any of these meetings?
Outsiders are not. not allowed to attend theirs. I'm probably going to attend the grape opposite, but I haven't yet.
Well, I don't think there's a... I have at least one colleague who has been going down there for years, and he's a defense attorney in Atlanta, Georgia. He's written a lot on him. He seems to be well accepted in the community. I'm just wondering if,
I know who you're talking about. I can't think of
his name.
Ken Briggs.
Briggs, yeah.
I know that he's been well accepted in Centennial Park, but right now the Jeffs faction of it is so close, I doubt that they would have been for anybody else.
And how do they spend those Sundays if they're not meeting in church these days?
I don't know.
So in one town, are they all of one faction, or are they both factions in one town?
From what I've read, there's people who are excommunicated who stay, and then there's also Centennial Park across the highway, just a few miles down, and that's the people who are part of the work, and that's a different breakaway sect with a different prophet. But a lot of those are people who left when Warren Jeffs came into power and things started to become so extreme, and they kind of dress in just modern day modest clothing. Totally different style and feeling in that community versus the others.
So if they're kicked out, do they still associate with each other?
They're not allowed to.
Neighbors?
They're not allowed to. They're not now anymore. But the if they want to be defiant, now they can stay because of the trust. And the trustee will allow them to stay.
Because they have a state-appointed manager on the trust. And he is working on trying to get the property turned back over to the members, and especially people who were excommunicated. So,
how would I be received as a passive outsider if I just happened upon this place and asked to buy a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk?
With the grocery store, other outsiders come into the grocery store, people in the area, because it's pretty remote out that way, and that grocery store is what I see is probably the biggest store around there. And so I see when I'm in there people from all different walks of life shopping there. So as far as that goes, you would be fine. And with me, the way I kind of entered into this project was just walking into the grocery store, and I thought, well, the worst I can be told is no. And I asked the guy who was bagging my groceries, is there anyone here that would talk to me about your lives here? And he's like, oh, yeah, sure. And gets out his cell phone. And that's how I kind of made my contact with this guy at the grocery store. And since then, now people in the grocery store, because I stop there every time I go, they recognize me and they say hello. And one particular woman who says she's happy to see me every time I come there. And so, you know, it just depends. I think if you go there and state your intentions in a way, they're really friendly. And I think there is something to their portrayal in the media and how they want to kind of stop that in a way, like when people come and talk to them. So it's interesting. The first time I went, I said I was a film student, a documentary student, and I was interested in working on this. And I think the guy that I speak with when I go there, he kind of wrote me off as just like a college girl who was visiting. But when I came back a second time, a few months later, he kind of went into high alert, and he was just like, okay, what are your media connections? Are you a reporter? Who are you with? Why are you doing, you know, really grilling me, taking down all of my information and taking down my college, and I, you know, offered that he could contact my grad program and have them confirm who I was and that I wasn't with the media and these kinds of things. So it just varies every time for me how I'm received there.
Was he old, young?
Like middle age, I guess. 40s, 50s.
I'm hearing you say that they do not want the media to come in, even if the media is friendly to their cause.
Yeah, so when I've asked different people I've met, you know, would you ever be willing to talk to me about this on camera? And every time, no, and, you know, is there anyone else that would be comfortable with this? I don't think you'll find anybody. They would, you know, people have said that. I don't think you'll find anyone who will let you record them. And they said, you know, their feeling is that the media edits them and cuts them up to make them look weird and doesn't show the truth of what they said, and so they're just totally distrustful.
I'm just going to add a little more context here in terms of what kind of place this is for people who haven't been there, and your pictures illustrate this. That is, I live in Michigan, and people hear about this in the news, they imagine this compound, maybe barricaded small little village in some remote desert somewhere. And as you can tell from these pictures, actually it's a fairly large, it's the biggest habitation between St. George and Canaan, right? And so these are incorporated cities.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, supposedly, they have sheriffs and a police department and so on. So in terms of if you drive in, the worst thing that will happen is that people won't talk to you if you ask questions, or maybe some vehicle will follow you around town just to see what you're up to, but they can't prevent you from being there.
No, because it's public. Yeah, the streets are publicly maintained.
Public places are under state laws and jurisdictions. So you can go in any time and drive around. I've done that a number of times. I've taken pictures, and we were followed, once or twice, but that's it.
Did you try to talk to them?
No. I'd be very interested in doing that if I had more time. We basically are on vacation going somewhere else and just driving through just to check things out and see how things are looking. But I've never had the time to stop to do that, but I'd like to. I've got a plan maybe to do some of that.
You're kind of on your central thesis is that the lack of finishing the houses is kind of an expression of identity. So the fact of a house being unfinished is kind of becomes an aesthetic thing on its own as an expression. And I'm just wondering, that sounds plausible to me, but I'm wondering if there's any material interest in doing so. Like, for example, you said it's not about the taxes, but maybe is there a, do people who don't conform to, present themselves as completely obedient, this being one expression of that, do they risk losing the services that come, any kind of material services that would that are under the control of the leadership? Or basically, is there kind of like an alternative explanation? It's just a material benefit from not finishing the house.
I'm not sure if that's why you wouldn't finish the house, but there's been this the suits over religious discrimination and the claims that people can't get city water turned on because they're not FLDS members or they were excommunicated, and that people can't find housing in the area and things like this that come from not being a part of the system there.
Even if they don't believe the end is coming, if they stop finishing their house, they look like they do.
Right. And so, and not that there would be some direct punishment for that, but that these symbolic expressions of identity put them in the in-group that makes them worthy of the assistance, whatever assistance they may receive from the UDP or whatever. Right?
That's totally possible. I don't know for sure. And there are some houses that are fully finished. Not every house is totally undone like this. There are some really lavishly done, fully finished houses, but they're really few and far between compared with the unfinished.
About half of your pictures show homes that are so unfinished they're not habitable, like this one.
Mm-hmm.
So they're tying up several tens of thousands of dollars worth of research on what I see right now on the screen, and it's not usable yet. So I can see stopping a house just beyond habitability. But this one, you can see right through, and it's certainly pretty big enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that represents, assuming your pictures are representative, about half the homes look like this one.
Some of these may be homes that belong to people who've been excommunicated and forced out.
Since they're absent.
Yeah, I'd say it's not half, that are totally uninhabitable, but there are some that I feel like my rule of when I'm looking around and figuring out what's habitable, it seems that any house that has even one or two windows that are in it, people live in the section with windows. There's another example. Like this house, no windows in it, and this house has a lot of storage around it. This one's definitely not inhabited. But let's see if I can find one that's really interesting in this regard.
See, in much of the country, rain and weather would tear up that uncovered plywood, wafer wood.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's so dry there, I guess the decay rate is very slow.
Yeah, like this house to me, it's a really expensive home. It's massive, but the entire bottom floor is boarded. So to me, I'm reading this as the family lives upstairs and then the downstairs just stays unused, which is interesting. And there are several examples that I see of that where there will be a fully finished smaller home and then a massive addition that never has been finished. And so that's why it seemed to support this kind of, I guess, local myth that the people did this so that they didn't have to pay property taxes. Because it seems strange to sink that much into your home and then never finish it for any without that material gain to it. And
we built a house in Cedar City a few years ago, and we were not allowed to be in it until they gave us a certificate of occupancy. It had to be finished. And they told us if we even started storing our stuff in it, they'd shut off our utilities because we couldn't do that until it was finished. So they've obviously got different rules down here. The building inspector doesn't have to say that the house is finished before they're allowed to live in it.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
Would the state ever condemn any of these buildings? I was passing through there a week ago, and there's a massive, looks like a stake center that's just uncompleted and abandoned. And wouldn't the state have a right to come in and say this is a hazard or something like that and require them to tear it down if they're not going to maintain it or complete it?
It would seem like that. I mean, there's so many of these buildings that are just massive and unfinished and abandoned. So
yeah,
it is really odd.
Which I couldn't believe.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't think it would. Like, this is the thing when I show people these photos a lot of the times. Like, I live on the East Coast, and so people are just like, I can't believe this is America. Like, this is wild, you know, and it is. It's really odd because anywhere else, the amount of uninhabited and unfinished buildings you would think would be condemned and something would be done by the government. But I think there are so many other issues that are so much more pressing with what's happening down there that that's maybe one that just falls by the way. Someone else had a question?
Well, I was just going to answer that. I think it's only been recently that the state has had anything to do with them at all. The state has kept out of those communities on purpose, and they've had their own, as you mentioned, police force, and that police force has not upheld the laws of the states of Utah and Arizona. They've been a kind of a private police force for the Jeff clan and their predecessors, and so people there can do pretty much what they want. They don't need to worry about getting occupation permits to occupy their homes and everything. They just do everything in-house, and it's just handled there, and I don't think the states have put their toe in it until quite recently.
Yeah, and that's the thing with the Mojave County Sheriff just now having outside officers patrolling, but they had to apply and get a grant for funding from the state of Arizona to pay for that. And so a lot of these kind of tax dollars get funneled into these things to try to police it from the outside. So it's an interesting position.
Speaking of tax dollars, how, I mean, you've always heard how there's always manipulation in the system. Is that correct?
I'm sorry?
Speaking of tax dollars, you know, you hear how there's manipulation of welfare and those kind of things. Is that correct?
Well, on paper, none of the women, you know, one out of every family is legally married to the husband, and then the rest technically would be single mothers. And so there's, I can't remember, I found the statistic, but the amount of tax dollars
that gets funneled in to a town this size in Arizona compared to anywhere else is just off the charts, compared to any other town in Arizona that size.
So the police force is probably being paid by state funding,
mm-hmm.
or county.
Yeah, it's because it's a and it's an incorporated town.
For the additional,
but it wouldn't be the state; it would be the local.
That's what I mean. The municipality or mm-hmm. the county or whatever.
My barber is from Stanish. He immigrated to this country, and he's commented about this because he hears about it in the news. And his statement was that in Denmark, if a woman has a baby, that baby's birth has to record a father. And when that is recorded, that father has a legal responsibility to take care of that kid to a majority. The country will not maintain it, and if that gentleman does not make those payments to support the child, he can't do anything. He can't get a driver's license. He can't go to school. He can't do anything. And they enforce it, and it takes care of all this, and it would stop this type of abuse if our country would have the guts to do something like that. Because you couldn't have all these women say, well, I'm not married, and having 10 or 15 kids.
It's not just the marital status, though. They look at the size of the household and how many people in that household need to be fed.
Yeah.
And they look at the income for the household. So if say the father doesn't make enough money, assuming he's there, they still may qualify for food stamps just because he, just like anybody else, if
well,
they're low the, income,
our
qualify.
Country should have a standard that you don't continue to parent children.
How are you going to stop it?
Well,
that's the problem.
Some countries are able to stop a lot of things. We
yeah,
might not like some of their actions on how they do it, but they do take care of it. We just allow this to continue to exist. And turn our backs to it.
I know you, but you can't. Procreation is a fundamental constitutional right in the United States.
Well, it isn't always that even, because they've done things to young girls in the South and so forth where they eliminated their ability to have children. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that, but that's how other states took care of it years ago.
But it was illegal.
It was legal.
It
was no stakes. It was legal when they did it.
Well,
now it might not be morally right.
It's unconstitutional. It's not just morally wrong. It's unconstitutional to do that. I'm not saying they didn't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But they can't do it now.
And I don't necessarily agree with that action, but they did do things to take care of some of that type of problem.
Are we getting off your topic?
I mean, a little, but.
I'm just making sure we're getting off topic. Okay. One thing that I really like about what you're doing is to think about how even in the most kind of like repressive cultural system, ways of expressing identity still sort of leak out. And so I'm wondering if in terms of land use and space use, if there's anything besides the connection, which I think is really smart about expression but through the presentation of the home, if there's other things you notice that are like that.
Well, I suppose just some my continued interest in dress and fashion. And so going there on different days of the week and seeing, for example, like on a Saturday, and this is purely subjective, but it feels like women's hair, it's even more elaborate on a Saturday. You know what I mean? And so
Saturday.
There's some interesting things of individuality that come out.
Why is that? Why Saturday?
More free time on a Saturday, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know for sure. But it seems like there's kind of a weekend, and that is like you're a little bit more dressed up on a Saturday. And like my contact in the grocery store has said when I've talked to him about dress, and he said, I wish you could come to our sacrament meeting and see the choir and see the ladies, because it's just this rainbow of colors, and that on Sunday the women wear lighter colors because during the week they need to wear something that can hide dirt, but then on Sunday they can wear their Sunday dress, which would be the same style of dress but in a lighter, brighter color. And so he said, you know, oh, I wish you could see that. And so there's still some differences, and some of the women that I've talked to just off the record I've asked them about, you know, do you make your own clothing and how do you decide on the designs. And one girl that I talked to said she had gone to a mall once, and that she still keeps in mind things that she saw in a mall to copy in the dresses that she makes.
And there are, like, if you look at an image of many women in the dress, it kind of could look like the same dress, but there are still a lot of choices, like the buttons and whether there's a vest on it, and different small, subtle things that women can do, even though they're still totally within the system and totally obedient, but there are still small aberrations they can make to have kind of their own look. And the hair is, I think, the most kind of flamboyant aspect, because the hair is so different on each woman, which is interesting too. Whereas, like, you could say it's like all this bouffant and it's all similar, but there's so much care and work that goes into these hairstyles. So there's some interesting expressions of individuality that still come out.
Do you know what the same stuff's going on in Texas?
I don't know. I have not been to Texas at all, so I don't know.
There is a website that you can go to, and I don't remember what it's called, but there's a judge down there who about once a month flies over the ranch there and takes pictures. And so you can if you Google it, you can probably find it. The pictures I've seen on there, it looks like they've mostly finished the stuff.
And they just tore down some towers
recently. Yeah, they've been a long time building it. They just finished it and it was torn down. And that's how they found out. It's this guy that flies over it.
Yeah.
Saw it.
So are you still going, or are you finished?
No, yeah, since I've lost contact with the main person I was talking to, and it just seems like it's going to be harder, I'm starting to kind of give up the idea that I could interview about fashion and dress, but I still am going to go down a couple of more times before I have to go back to North Carolina for school and shoot some more of these images and think about more of making sure I have a more balanced view of the houses and representative kind of survey.
Because I was just going to ask you the differences you've seen over time with the changes in leadership and those kind of things and whatever edict Jeff sends out.
Well, I've only been working on this for this year, so I only know post-Warren Jeffs and how it is in Colorado City post-Warren Jeffs.
But things change so frequently with him.
Mm-hmm.
What does his house look like?
I haven't been able to find it. I don't know. I'm sure that I could find it if I did a lot of internet research, but I haven't seen it myself in person.
There's a big mansion behind a big wall, and reportedly that was being built for him, but it was after, I think they built it after he was incarcerated.
I've heard that they started building kind of like this palatial thing for him.
And right now I'm told that it's unoccupied.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also told, the rumor is, that these 15 men who are supposed to father all the children are doing their ordinance of conception in that house. But I don't know if that's true.
Interesting.
And since it's an ordinance, it has to be witnessed. That, again, is a rumor.
Yeah, I mean, the rumor thing that I've heard, too, is that they really deeply believe that any day God will come and just break Warren Jeffs out of prison, and he will just walk free back to them. So
there was a lot of speculation that tower down in Texas, that he was going to, either they were going to put his statue on it, or he was going to preach from it. They're also building a big, like, amphitheater there. When the angels come and break down the walls of the prison, he's going to go and preach them. And all the world is going to come to hear.
Can't wait.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.